You're listening to Radio 3CR 855 on your AM dial, and I am Chiara Cordelli from the University of Chicago.
So glad you tuned in to Radical Philosophy. I'm your host, Beth Matthews. Today on the program, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Charlotte Miller about witches, devils, and ghosts. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
And can you give us a little bit of background information about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a senior lecturer in history at the University of Melbourne. I've been here about 4 or 5 years now, I think. But I guess I've always been interested in witches, you know, because I love learning about people's stories and what people believe. And when things are sort of seem unbelievable, I want to try and understand what is it that makes that believable to that person? What is it about that culture? So in terms of how I sort of got into the witches, as I say, I was always interested when I was little, but I never realized it was something you could actually study. And then when I came and I did my undergrad at the University of Melbourne, and there was a subject on witches and witch hunting, and I took it, and it was just transformative. It was amazing to learn about this completely different society where their worldview really made witches and devils a reality for them, and a really terrifying reality. So once I took that subject in undergrad, I just didn't really stop. I sort of kept going. I did my PhD and a postdoc, and now I teach it. So, yeah, it's been a lifelong interest.
Wow, it's really interesting. But look, would you have a definition of witches, devils, and ghosts? Because I think when you say that, I mean, I think everybody has a different sort of image of witches and devils and ghosts.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So I look at witchcraft as it existed or was believed to exist in the 16th, 17th, and into the 18th centuries. And so people have always believed in witches and magic across all cultures, across all times. But in Europe in the 15th century, concerns about witchcraft started to really amp up. And that was because people started becoming worried about a new form of heresy, a diabolical heresy. So heresy is believing something that goes against the orthodoxy of the church. And people started becoming really concerned that there were these people, mainly women, but not always women, these people who actually had made a pact with the devil. And by making that pact, they became witches. And in return for their allegiance to the devil, they got special powers. So they got the ability to make people impotent or kill children or get money or seek revenge. In terms of what a witch looked like, I think the stereotype of what we think of as a witch today is quite true. So witches were quite likely to be elderly women. The sort of hooked nose, the warts, all of that does come from a stereotype that existed 400 years ago. But yeah, really, witches were people who were believed to be in league with the devil. But I should clarify that these people didn't think they were witches. That was a label imposed on them by their neighbours or by authorities. It wasn't something they themselves embraced.
So why should we rethink English witchcraft?
Yeah, so English witchcraft has always been seen as quite different from European witchcraft. So traditionally in the sort of the types of people, the historians who've written about witchcraft over the past 50 years have argued that European witchcraft is very much about devil worship and English witchcraft is very much about the harm that witches cause, less so about the devil. And what I wanted to argue in my first book, which came out a few years ago now, was that actually English witchcraft was very much about the devil. But it didn't look like the devil in European witchcraft. So the European witchcraft, the devil is what we would picture, so a sort of cloven-footed black man, black as in terms of clothing colour. But in England, the devil takes the form of a familiar spirit. So you might have heard of familiar spirits if you've listened to or read Harry Potter or read Philip Pullman's books. The familiar is a sort of little animal, like an owl or a cat or something, that helps the witch. And so that belief is an English belief that stems from the 16th century, that witches were in league with these little creatures who were actually the devil in disguise and helped the witches achieve their goals.
Right. So you mentioned this before, but so what was the deal with the devil in early modern England?
That's a big question. So you're in a religious society. there's God and there's the devil. You can't have one without the other. But what you have happening in England in the 16th century is the Reformation is happening. So the Protestant Reformation, where the country becomes primarily Protestant rather than Catholic. And as part of that transformation, the devil changes and the way in which people view the devil changes. And actually the devil becomes imbued with more power and more fear than he was previously. And that's partly because Protestantism tends to emphasize the power of the devil as a sort of internal tempter. So not somebody that you can sort of outrun or avoid, but someone that sort of causes temptation in your own mind. So this idea that the devil is constantly tempting you is something that comes through very strongly in the 16th century. And witchcraft is meant to be people who've given in to temptation from the devil. So the devil is really key to understanding witchcraft. You can't have witchcraft without a strong belief in the devil as well.
Now, you mentioned about a familiar before, but when I actually looked a familiar up, it wasn't actually what I thought it was. So could you tell us what a familiar is and what its role is?
Sure. What can I ask what you looked up? What did it say?
Well, it said it wasn't necessarily a non-human animal. It could have been a spirit.
Yeah, so that's true, particularly in Scotland, that you do sometimes see spirits or sort of inhuman form. There's also been some very recent scholarship suggesting that there are some sort of ghost familiars. But in general, in I'd say 80 to 90% of cases, the familiar is an English phenomenon. They do exist a bit in Scotland, but they don't exist in the rest of Europe. And they are a small, common animal, so a hare, a dog, a cat, a mouse, something small like that. And that familiar is how the witch makes a pact with the devil. So some familiar spirits will suck blood from the witch as sort of the making of the pact. And then that familiar spirit will do the witch's bidding. So they will go and hurt people for them. They will bring them money. They will talk to them. And you also have people saying that they see familiars as evidence of witchcraft. So, for instance, there have been cases where people have been being interrogated for witchcraft, and then the interrogators see a mouse run across the floor and they say, look, it's the familiar spirit. So they are believed to be tangible animals in the majority of cases.
Right. That's really, I suppose that's interesting. If you don't have a pet, you can just have a pet ghost, couldn't you, to be your familiar?
You could. And I think that the familiars, I mean, people have argued that familiars are very English because the English are obsessed with pets, which is obviously not a very strong argument. In some of these cases, I think you can see how an old lady might be talking to a cat and she might put out milk for a cat and she might sort of have that as a companion animal. And then that can be turned into, well, that was the devil. And so sometimes I think the familiars, when you look at stories of familiars and witches talking to familiars, you get a sense of the kind of lived reality of that person's life.
Yeah. So could you tell us about anger, malice, and emotional control?
I could. Well, one of the ways in which people think about witches in England particularly is they think of them as very angry and vengeful and malicious people. And I should say that in English witchcraft, a lot of accusations come from people's neighbours. So they don't come from the top down. They do sometimes, but in general, it's somebody who has lived next to you for 40 years and you know them and you know their family, you know them well, and over time sort of resentments and angers have built up and those tend to spill out into witchcraft accusations. And I should say also that the majority of witches, accused witches, were female, but also the majority of people doing the accusing was female as well. So there's an interesting sort of dynamic there. But I guess one of the most common examples of malice in witchcraft is one of the ways in which witchcraft allegations comes across. So a very typical story would be that an old woman goes to someone's door. She's very poor and she knocks on the door and she asks for some bread or some cheese or charity. And the person refuses to do that. And as that woman walks away empty-handed, she mutters under her breath. And so maybe she curses or she swears and you hear that. And then the next day, that person's cow drops dead. And so they think that was that woman. She did that to me. And it helps to displace someone's guilt in not giving charity to the old woman, and it turns the blame on her. So we have countless examples of people saying, well, I had an altercation with that woman and now this misfortune has happened, and so she did it. So it's a way of explaining misfortune as well and blaming it on a person's malice and anger.
Yeah, real scapegoat. Who was really sleeping with the devils?
Well, a lot of witches, particularly in Europe, were accused of engaging in sexual intercourse with devils, particularly in the Holy Roman Empire. So that's really what we'd mainly think of as Germany today, but also in Switzerland and France and so on. Witches were believed to go to Sabbaths. So a Sabbath is an event normally at night, normally at midnight, where witches would go and meet the devil, they would dance with him, they would have feasts, and they would also engage in unnatural orgies. Obviously, these things didn't happen, but people believed they did. And so sometimes when witches were interrogated, they were also forced to admit that they had also slept with the devil as well. So that was part of making that pact. That's much less common in England, but you do still have accounts of witches who supposedly slept with a demon in exchange for some form of reward as well. So the witchcraft is also sexualized.
Is there a witchcraft conspiracy?
Well, today or then, I mean, it's hard to say. I think one of the things that is really important to understand about witchcraft in the 16th and 17th centuries, you can't just have one witch, because the idea is that there's this idea in the 16th century that the end times are coming, the apocalypse is coming, time is short. And so there's several Bible quotes that say that when the end times are coming, the devil will get more fearsome, more angry, more wrathful. And so a lot of people are saying that because it's the end of days, the devil is recruiting actively. So the idea is that the devil is recruiting multiple witches to enlarge his kingdom. And so witchcraft is scary to people because these are ordinary people who you know who could be hiding in plain sight. So this idea of a sort of secret hidden conspiracy of witches who are in league with the devil sounds ridiculous to us now, but it was something that was believed by 90%+ of the population. It was legislated against. There were trials. And it was really seen as an actual threat to godly society.
Yeah, I suppose people's attitudes have changed quite a bit. I mean, you look at Halloween and dressing up as a witch is like a bit of fun now. And but yeah, obviously it was taken much more seriously, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, even so today, unfortunately, we still in countries like Papua New Guinea and parts of Asia, there's still an epidemic of people being accused of witchcraft and being executed, often by mob violence, which is really awful. The UN actually has a Human Rights Commission on witchcraft, which tries to stop witchcraft-related violence. So it's a real problem. But also I think we still see fear of witches in a lot of political language. I don't know if you remember, years ago, Julia Gillard was making a speech and there was a sign behind Tony Abbott was making a speech about Julia Gillard and someone behind her was holding a sign saying, ditch the witch. And Hillary Clinton was often referred to as a witch as well. So it's an insult that people can kind of trot out, but it's only ever used against women and it has a clear connotation that everyone seems to share. So it's still demonized in a lot of ways, I think, and still mobilized politically, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is. I was reading once that there was a fishing village, and all the men went out to fish and left the women and children at home. And when they came back, all the women and children had been killed, and the men that were there just said, "Oh, they were all witches, so we killed them all." And it was like, they weren't witches, they were our wives and our children. So it was almost like an excuse. Oh, it was. I mean, the whole lot was just wiped out. It's sort of bit of an excuse, isn't it? Oh, she's a witch, you know, we have to burn her at the stake.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's also a lot of violence towards children as well, and supposed child witches, which again is, you know, really sad and awful.
It is. How do emotions work in the supernatural narratives?
In so many ways, I think. I mean, I sort of gave one example thinking about that idea of the malicious witch that sort of destroys property and takes revenge on slights and so on. I think that also people's emotions run very high during misfortune. So in the 16th and 17th century, we have very high child and maternal mortality rates, for example. And so mothers and babies do quite frequently die in childbirth. And so quite often witches are accused of killing babies or disrupting fertility. So they are sort of a safe scapegoat for something that has happened that is actually deeply emotionally traumatizing and that which people want an explanation for. And so I think that generally witchcraft accusations are deeply emotional and they come from a really emotional place.
Yeah, well, that even reminds me of a case where a woman had, I don't know, was it four or five children, and they all died, and she was charged with their murder. But it was has been proved that it probably was a genetic condition. I mean, they can't prove 100%, but so yeah, I suppose it's still carrying on in a way, isn't it? It's like
we want an explanation for things.
Definitely. But look, do you really think the majority of people really believe that there are witches? I mean, I watch a lot of horror movies, and when I was young, I saw a horror movie about a vampire. But I knew that vampires weren't real. I mean, so.
But we're living in a time in the sixth. I mean, you have some skeptics in the 16th and 17th century, definitely, but they're not saying that witches don't exist. They're saying that these women are not witches. And so basically you're living in a world where God absolutely exists, where pre-atheism, God is not really questioned in that way. The devil absolutely exists, and that means that spirits absolutely exist. And the Bible says that there are witches. So if you live in a culture that is really saturated in religion, and this is a framework for understanding the world, it makes sense, because you're just looking at a framework of, well, there are witches and they did this, and that explains that. And so very, very educated, very intelligent people didn't just believe in witches, but wrote whole treatises explaining how witches existed, explaining their role with the devil, explaining how exactly they got their powers. So it was something that people didn't just sort of believe, but also studied and tried to understand. So it wasn't really until the late 17th, early 18th century that skepticism became much more mainstream.
I suppose it's connected with, as you said, with religion, isn't it? So, I mean, I think with the latest census, there's, an increasing percentage of atheists. I mean, if, as you said, the witches and the devil are connected. So if you're an atheist, you don't believe in either.
No, that's right. But we don't really have atheism in the 16th and 17th century.
No.
So it's a very different landscape.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, it's interesting to say highly educated people, but, they're sort of, well, there still are a lot of philosophers who aren't atheists as well, which I find quite weird, but that's just my personal
opinion. It is interesting. I mean, I teach a subject on witch hunting, and one of the main thing I really want people to understand from the start is a lot of the students come in thinking, well, these people were just uneducated or they were stupid. And you can't say that about a whole society. So what you really need to do in that subject is explain to people why belief in witches is logical within a particular worldview. And so that's really what we're trying to unpack. Why does this make sense? Why did smart people believe this? And I think once you get into that mindset, you learn so much about a culture to try and understand that.
So why did smart people believe that?
Because it made sense. Because God recruits people for his service and the devil recruits people for his service, and they're at war and the apocalypse is coming. And they think the apocalypse is coming because there's been plague, there's been fire, there's been death, there's been war. It really feels like the end of the world is coming. And there's a framework with the Bible and with people's interpretations. And so it is all sort of within the realm of what they know.
So what other themes do you discuss in your course?
Well, that one is mainly about witchcraft, but we also talk about demonic possession as well, which is tied. Sometimes people think that witches have caused demonic possession, so they are tied. And what else do? We talk about the Reformation more broadly, of course. We talk about the devil's growing power. And we talk about Salem as well at the end, which is about witchcraft, of course, and it's the example most people think of when they think of witchcraft. But Salem actually comes very late in the period. It's in 1692, so it's almost at the end of witch hunting. So it's actually quite unusual. So, yeah, it's a European course, but we do go across to Salem as well.
Right. Well, it sounds really interesting. Now, you've got a new book coming out called The Demonic and the Dead. Can we have a bit of a sneak preview about what's in your book?
Yeah, I've just finished it, so it's a little while off, but hopefully not too long. So it's about ghosts in the 16th and 17th century and how sort of people had individual experiences of ghosts, how that worked, and also how ghosts became increasingly demonized. So I was saying earlier that in the 16th, 17th century, the devil becomes more prominent in people's minds and in people's piety, and that also spreads to ghost belief. So we see a lot of ghosts who are sort of the souls of the dead who've come back, supposedly, but they take on demonic characteristics. And then some of them actually take on animalistic characteristics like familiars as well. So there's a lot of sort of messy crossover in what's a ghost, what's a familiar, what's a witch, what's a devil. So it's sort of unpicking that messy problem and also telling a lot of ghost stories in the process.
So what exactly is a ghost? What would your definition be?
I think the definition would be most people's definition, which is that it's meant to be a soul of someone who has died, who's come back. It often appears in the shape of the person who's died, often wearing the exact same clothing that they were wearing. Sometimes when ghosts have been murdered, they come back with a wound or something, so they're sort of coming back for vengeance. But the shape of ghosts hasn't changed that much in the last 500 years. I think what most people think of ghosts now is quite similar. The difference being, I suppose, in the 16th and 17th century, people would say that they saw a physical ghost, whereas now people tend to say they felt a presence or they sensed something. They're sort of more amorphous.
So is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't already covered?
I guess it's just interesting to think about different people's beliefs. It sounds sort of mad to us that somebody was convicted of witchcraft because they were accused of talking to a toad and taking revenge on their neighbour. That sounds insane. But to understand why that's not insane, you have to get into the minds of people who've lived 400 years ago and try and understand why that makes sense. And so I find that really enjoyable and fulfilling to try and really understand the mindset of people who live 400 years ago, who are, in a lot of ways, I think we think of as similar to us, and they are, but they're also fundamentally different. So I really enjoy being able to do that through looking at really fantastical experiences.
Yeah, well, it's still quite popular. I actually went to see a medium with a friend last week. And
oh, wow.
I just went because I thought, look, I've seen it on TV. I've never actually been there. And it was quite interesting. In a way, they were quite some of them were – there were three mediums there, and a couple were quite vague. But one woman, she really got a lot of names correct. And I thought that was actually quite amazing. I did think there's something in this, and she'd sort of go up to somebody and she'd feel the spirit and tell somebody all about it. And look, she didn't get anything, or none of them really got anything wrong, you know, not terribly wrong. You know, they'd have an estimate of how old their parents were when they died, and you know, so that's quite interesting. Do you think there's sort of been a bit of a resurge in this interest?
I mean, I think that there's definitely been research in witches and ghosts, yes. And also a few years ago, I know it was really linked to sort of feminist movements as well, that people were sort of saying that they are sort of the witches that you couldn't burn, which I find a bit odd, but I think people like to take on the witch as sort of a powerful female figure. And whether that's particularly grounded in historical reality is a question. But I think people do think, well, yes, this is a powerful symbol. It's a symbol that annoys authority. We want to use this to protest. In terms of the ghosts and mediums, ghosts and mediums have been popular for a very long time, and they peak at sort of periods of stress. So after the First World War, there's a huge, huge influx of beliefs about spiritualism and mediums because so many people have died and people want to speak to their loved ones. So I think when people are feeling unsure about the future, they do think about the supernatural more. So, yes, I think at the moment people probably are indulging in that a bit more than maybe a few years ago.
Yeah, you know, that's quite fascinating, isn't it? I know one young woman who was there with the medium, and he was saying to her how he knew that her brother had died, like in his early 20s. And it was, you know, sort of just looking at her face, she was quite upset, of course. But he said that your brother wants to give you a message, and that it's he's living his life through you. So don't, you know, don't sort of worry about him, because he's with you all the time. And I thought that was such a good thing, you know, to hear that. And you could sort of see relief on her face that she didn't need to be sad and mourn him, because he's still with her.
I think some people really do find a lot of comfort in that belief. I think some people think that mediums are very manipulative and are sort of preying on people who are mourning, but then other people think that it is helpful and part of a grieving process. So, yeah, you can see both sides.
Yeah, no, it was a very, very interesting topic. So thanks so much for coming onto the program today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I've been speaking with Dr. Charlotte Miller about witches, devils and ghosts. And that's all we have time for today, and really enjoyed your company, and do tune in next month.